I'm very excited for this panel. Actually, we've been trying to put this together for a while, and it's an important issue, outreach to the Caribbean population, government archives, and I'm really happy that the presenters are here today to tell us a little bit about some of the programs that they're implementing in their government repositories. We have three speakers today. The first speaker will be Ms. Avril Bellefond. She has been the Senior Archives and Records Officer at the National Archives of Trinidad and Tobago since 2006. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Burgess Jules. I work with the Black Metropolis Research Consortium in Chicago. So Avril completed an MLIS at the University of Toronto. She then worked as a librarian at the Information Networks Division of the National Library, the Heritage Library, and the Parliament Library before moving to the National Archives. Her duties at the National Archives include management of outreach programs, the website, and overseeing the projects of the searchroom staff. She has taught information literacy at one of the local colleges and developed a course for the introduction to electronic records management, which forms part of a certificate in a records management program. Our second speaker will be Dominique Taffa.
Right? Yeah.
Dominique has been the director of the Archives of Martinique since 2000. She has over 25 years of experience in archives and museums, including experience at the French Overseas National Archives and the National Museum of African and Oceanic Arts in Paris. For the past 10 years, she has devoted herself to promoting the archives of Caribbean cultural heritage and cultural development by the use of information technologies. Dominique was instrumental in designing and implementing a plan for digitizing historical collections of Martinique. She is particularly interested in social history and cultural relations between Europe, the Caribbean, and Africa, and has published over 20 articles and books on this topic. Dominique currently serves as treasurer of CARBICA, which is the Caribbean regional branch of the International Council on Archives. Her other responsibilities at CARBICA include coordinating a project named Memory of the Islands, Gateway for Archival Networking, or MIGAN, which is a web portal that allows public access to Caribbean archives. And third, we have Mrs. Margot Thomas. Margot is the director of the National Archives Authority of St. Lucia. After completing an MA in Archives Administration and Records Management from the University College London in 1992, Margot returned to St. Lucia and since then has been involved in spearheading work in the areas of archives and records management on the island. In 1997, Mrs. Thomas was elected president of CARBICA and began serving her four-year term and sought to assist the countries of the OECS in upgrading their national archives and training government employees in records management. In 2006, Mrs. Thomas became involved in the newly established Memory of the World National Committee and was elected chairperson. She is also on the board of the Regional Committee for Latin America and the Caribbean and was elected president of that committee in 2009. Achieving the distinction of being the first Caribbean person to hold that position. Mrs. Thomas is well known throughout St. Lucia for the work she has been doing training and educating in the archives and records management, both in the public service and private sector. She is a frequent guest on local television and radio radio programs explaining the work of the National Archives and consulting on St. Lucian history. So without further ado, we have Avril. Thanks again for being here.
Okay, good morning, everyone, and thanks again for being here. Just to apologize immediately, I have a little flu, so sometimes my voice will go, and I'll need to... I forgot my water. Just a water. Right, to make sure that I don't go into a coughing fit. All right, so I'll read a little bit. As you see, my name is Avril Bellefond, from the National Archives of Trinidad and Tobago. People who know me say that I fell into the outreach program or the outreach activities out of pure necessity because it certainly wasn't what I was hired to do. It was the result of being asked just one too many times, what do you do again? Or an archivu? But accident or fate, this area has become my passion. Now, I'm going to read for you a line from Miss Shapley. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. We all know that once we make the archives personal, people do care, and care passionately. And then they tell us their life stories, and that of their parents, their grandparents, and great-grandparents. Now, I saw this line actually long after I had named the presentation, but it seems so appropriate to go with what I'm talking about, meaning, from the name of the article, of course, outreach up close and personal. So today I'm going to highlight how some of those stories got told at the National Archives of Trinidad and Tobago. So just a little bit about Trinidad and Tobago to start off, some of our early efforts, results that we've gotten thus far, and then our next steps. Okay, Trinidad and Tobago is a twin island state with a population of approximately 1.3 million people, and as with other islands in the Caribbean, we have a similar past of colonization. Well, it's several, of course, the Spanish, the French, the Dutch, in the case of Tobago, and finally, for most of us, the British. Slavery in the form of transatlantic slave trade in Africans, indentureship in Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, Guyana, and some of the others as well, East Indian indentureship and Chinese indentureship. And, of course, we became independent in 1962 and then a republic in 1976. Now, efforts to protect the records of the government can be traced back to the aftermath of a disastrous fire which we had in 1903. And since then, people say Port of Spain has burned down several times, so we have lost records all through 1903 to 1947. There several fires occurred, so we did lose a significant amount of our records. The National Archives, however, was eventually established in 1960 with the appointment of the first government archivist. And our records currently date from 1797. Most of them cover the British colonial period, and, of course, the present. It's approximately 3,000 cubic meters of records. Right. So quoting Ms. Shapley again, we started most of our projects with the zero budget marketing principles, where there was no budget for doing outreach. We just realized that people don't know what we're about, don't know what we have, and we needed to get out there. So most of the things we did at the beginning, as with everyone else, brochures, flyers, posters, all of which we did in-house. Our staff just created and, you know, made on their own in-house. We tried community advertising. Wherever there was free advertising available, we used it. And then who came? Usually who came were the people who already knew about us, as we said, preaching to the converted. And, of course, those who were forced to come, the young people. So we did in the beginning have a lot more of the primary school students coming to us rather than even the secondary schools. And this is an example of one of our earlier, what we did on our own usually in terms of in the search room at our archives. Okay, so then we went on to trying partnerships with other persons, mostly NGOs. An example here we have the Indian Caribbean Cultural Council, where they supplied us with artifacts, photographs. They helped us with producing the content of the brochures and added us to their mailing list so that we would have more persons coming in. And they had an established relationship with the newspapers, so we got a little more press coverage dealing with this particular organization. But still, again, the response was limited. So we decided we were going to take a leap of faith and try something else. Okay. We decided to try this public lecture. Now, we've done public lectures before, but we've had them on evenings after work time, and they were really not very successful. But we said we're going to try it now earlier in the day during regular office hours, so it was supposed to have been 10 to 12, and definitely targeting the schools. It was like a blitz trying to make sure that we get them to come in. And public advertising, we actually had a little budget for this one, so we were actually able to pay for some advertising. And, of course, we got the government media involved by trying to invite our head of our division, head of our organization, which would be our minister. And any event that the minister goes to, the government media must go cover. So we did that. Certainly the numbers were better. But what we realized also with this, because we focused on genealogy, one of the resident genealogists, the guy comes to us, practically lives in the archives, We encouraged him to come do the talk first, and he brought with him three persons who he had already traced their roots, and we prepared boards for them. I think I have them. Oh, we'll get to them. We prepared boards of their story. So there were photographs of the persons and the images of the records which identified their ancestors, as well as them meeting persons who currently survive in India who are related to them. So their whole story was there, plus the written report if you wanted to read it. And the persons were present for you to talk to them. And that actually is what was really great about that particular event. We could not get people to leave at the end of the day because everybody was talking to everyone else and everybody wanted to hear what the other person's story was, what their experience was. We discovered other persons who had informally done it on their own, who had started or tried to start, and then, of course, they gained information from these people who had already achieved their end. So the students who came in particular were really keen to talk to the people, and then they looked at the records in a different way. That list, the ship list or the names of persons at an estate, suddenly had names of their neighbors and their friends and the people in their community. So it became personal to them. And at the end of that, we realized storytelling is what they wanted. They wanted to be part of that story. And even if this first event wasn't huge, it opened our eyes as to how we could approach the outreach in a better way. Okay, so I'm just a little nervous. All right, so storytelling continuing. The same genealogist, something that he says always is that when he goes tracing roots, it's not to find somebody famous or find somebody who'd done something great or anything. Every person that he traced back, an immigrant or someone who came here as an enslaved person, that person is a hero because that person took, well, the ones who came by choice, of course, took a leap of faith and came to Trinidad and Tobago to get a better life, to learn, to develop their family, to improve their situation. For those who were forced and brought as enslaved persons, it's an example of people who have triumphed and contributed and, you know, developed a whole new society. So his line, his tagline is that he's discovering the heroes in you. And again, adding to what we wanted to portray, the idea of this being very personal. You don't have to look outside of yourself to get that sense of being a hero. There's something else we also use from this genealogist, which is the ancestral family tree. After that first exhibit, we take it to almost every exhibit we have, even if it's not really related necessarily to tracing roots. What we found is, in the Caribbean, we have a very oral tradition. Storytelling is very much part of our life. And by giving the young persons the ancestral family tree, we don't tell them, okay, think about who is your ancestor. Try to work out from the top. You need to work out from yourself. So you put yourself in at the bottom, and it's a project. They have ones online now, but we were wrong. When we go out, we go with the paper one. You put yourself in, then add your father, your mother, so on, and then you make it a puzzle for the family to do. So you share it around the family. So if you don't know a part, you give it to somebody else, and it goes beyond the family, into the village, into the neighborhood, until you get as much of that information filled in as possible. Because our records are not complete in any way, if you want to come trace history, you really have to come with something in there. So instead of them coming to the archives and being disappointed that, oh, we don't have anything, we don't know the name of the ship they came on or the date or anything, we always start people with that tree and make it a family exercise, an exercise for you to talk to your elders, to talk to other persons in the area. So then you come to the records with something. And in addition to that, you come having built on your own family history and in the society of your home then, literally. Right. The next concept that came out of this gentleman's talk was the idea of the Jahaji Bai, which is called in Trinidad the Brotherhood of the Boat. It refers to East Indian, the relationship that developed between East Indian indentured laborers on the ship as they went through this long passage, many months, of course, on the ship, and they developed a relationship. In addition, when they left the ship, many of them went to the same plantations, so that relationship continued. But in his in trying to trace roots, what you find is most of these positions came and only one name was given. So you could have 100 Radicas or 100 Sugrims or 100 whatever. And he now has to identify that one person that you are looking for. So he has developed this methodology, which he calls the, let me get the right term, creating the arrival scenario. In creating that scenario, he tries to identify these jihadis. So if you know all the persons who came, you remember who came with you on that ship, if you came with a wife, you came with children, if you arrived, and together you went to this estate and then another person went to another, that whole story needs to be told before you can actually identify, this is the person I'm talking about, this is the radical, the sugrim that I'm looking at. So that arrival scenario became very important. Again, here we have the storytelling being more important than actually coming straight to the record. Because until you know that, you can look at 100 radicals and know nothing. So it's really important to tell those stories in advance. Right. So now that this information is gained from the jihadi, we encourage, even in the discussion, even from the trees, we're telling people, document. And there are people, as I said, informally who had already documented. And then we move forward then to that information being shared and becoming a community of records. Now, this is an article I read from, I hope I'm saying it right, it's Yackel or Yackel, and Torres, but they're referring to the idea of community of records that Bastian spoke about. And those records then go into the pool. That information that you share in the story goes into the pool of information that everybody has. So that so it adds to the full record of persons tracing their roots. Okay, here it is. So this is the these are the stories of Dr. Dave Maraj, Mr. Shamsuddin, and Veda Hayamathur. I hope I'm saying it right. What we did is we created these banners for each one of them, and every time we go out to an exhibition with them, they have their banners, and they can just, they come with, they stand there and they share that story, and then people share those stories, their stories with them, and again, add to the information that we have. All right, well, sample of the family tree that we, this is just actually a small one, but the ones we use has a few more generations back. Okay, so something that also came out of that first exhibit was that everybody said, so when are you coming to us? Coming to the archives, we realized, was always a problem. We always had smaller groups that way. So everybody was really enthusiastic. Come to our town, come to our village, and do the whatever. So we did 4 towns in about 2 years. We had some problems in some areas, and the other areas were really good. Most importantly, the audience was hugely enthusiastic. There was great support from the community, and the ministry supported the effort because it, well, made them look good. And we discovered records out there. By going and talking to people and hearing those stories, we found, I just wanted to highlight one that we did find, in Princestown, it was information on ownership of land in what we call the company villages. So the black soldiers who were freed for fighting in the War of 1812, they were given land in Trinidad and Tobago. And somebody there had information on how that land was given and distributed in those company villages. So we gain as well by going out and listening to these things. And these things are there in the villages informally, but we really need to get out there and let them know. Okay, so that was Waterloo, San Fernando. Okay, and now one of our biggest successes has been, I know my time is coming down, but I really want to talk about the Emancipation Village. And I'm going to read it because I don't want to miss out. All right. One of our most successful ventures to date has been the booth at the Emancipation Village. Emancipation is celebrated in Trinidad and Tobago on August 1st every year. Over the past 3 years, we've partnered with the Emancipation Support Committee, which is an NGO, and they've helped us stage lectures. But we also put on this booth in what is called a marketplace. It's the Emancipation Village. So there are things on sale, clothes, craft, other things, books. But we are one of the few information booths there. The best thing about this booth is that we are able to meet a clientele who would not normally ever walk into the archives. And we have a chance to share information, connect them to the record, and hopefully get follow-up visits from them at the archives. We use the ancestral family tree there as well, and we have discovered persons who have already traced their roots or gotten their stories written, and we have encouraged them to share it with us at the archives. I think this venture, most of all, we have done all of what we set out to do with this event. And that's just there. Okay, and these are just some of the comments that we've had from persons, especially at the village. Now, something I really want to highlight. Yes, this is very positive, and, you know, people are really encouraging when we get this. But I want you to note that when we go out, what you also find is that people challenge you more. When you're in the archives, somehow there's a sort of security there. But once you go out to villages and out to people, as I say, who would not normally come to you, they ask the hard questions. And it challenges us to bring the record to them in the way they need to see it. Right? There was a gentleman who was particularly upset about an extract, and I have it there last, the misleading extract, which sanitized slavery. He said it makes it sound like it's, you know, it was okay. It's a little business, and he was very distressed. But we have to let them know, of course, we're only reproducing the record as it existed at that time, and you have to be mindful of the mindset that produced that record. But it is important, too, that he engage with that record. So we're not telling you don't feel. Of course we will feel, but really be mindful of where the information is coming from. And these are just some of the outcomes that we've had as a result of going to these villages and other areas. We started doing the seminars with the secondary schools. Again, when we went to the districts, the people insisted we come to them. So far we've done a couple of the seminars where we go directly to the schools, bring copies of the records, and work with the teachers to help the what we call our A-level students, but I guess a secondary school here. Well, yeah. Where there's a part of the work that they need to do where they have to be exposed to primary records. So we bring the records to them and the teachers, and we work together with them to do that. We're currently set up now to do this meeting with the principals to expand that work. We already do seminars with the university students, again, history students, who have to work with the primary records. One of the lecturers who worked with us in one of our tours out at San Fernando, she volunteered to assist us with writing our guide on the Indian indentureship records. So that's already started, actually. It should go to print before the end of the year. And we started a blog because there was a huge argument which contested one of the records that we had. And, well, contested in the sense in the interpretation of the record. So we said, give them the space now to discuss that. So we created that. And, well, that's just on the blog. Right. And going forward, as you see, I've said nothing about Tobago, but I just want to say very quickly and end that all those projects now are waiting to be done for Tobago. And they actually came out of people who came to the archives and said to us, I have this information. Because we went out to them, they came to us with this. And they've written papers, and we are supporting it with the documents. And we're hoping to go to Tobago Heritage Festival next year, which is similar to what is happening with the Emancipation Village. And this is just, I want to leave you with a quote from somebody who came to the Emancipation Village and left this in one of our guest books. And she said, my eyes are open. I am so aware. And I just want to say that it's really in telling those stories that our records, although they're government records and they're sterile and they can be boring, we need to get those stories in there, out of them, so that people will fill those gaps in the government record. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Before I start, I must apologize because English is not my native language. So I hope you understand what I say. And if you have questions, of course, you're welcome. So I will try in this paper to present to you the achievements the Archives of Martinique have done in the field of outreach to the public. But first, I need to present a little the context of Martinique, which is very particular in the Caribbean region, to explain what is at stake, what are the challenges, the specific challenges we have to meet in this French-speaking and French region. So Martinique is a French overseas department, how we call it. It has become, it has acquired that status in 1948, before it was a French colony. And since 1848, people are citizens, French citizens. So this is something very, very important to know. We are now 403,000 inhabitants with a rather young population, but the demographic model has really evolved very quickly these past 10 years, and we have a population growing very, very much older. So this is also one something that has to be taken into account as far as you have to know about the social context. There's also something to point out, which is that there's an important social, I would say, segmentation, which is with a rather high, average high standard of life, but this social segmentation is partially overlapped by the traditional racial distinction between what we call the Béquets, so the white, the descendants of white planters, and the rest of the population. We have very few indicators showing the cultural practices of the population, so it is somewhat uneasy to build an outreach policy, because if you knew better of how, you know, people have, well, what kind of practices they have in the cultural field, that would help. As regarding to what I would call learned practices, one can only assess that only 6% of the population was registered in a public library, as compared to French, which is 15%. So that is also something showing how people have a relationship to written material. So our history is still shared with France, but distinct due to the colonial situation and the institution of slavery, has forged a cultural identity where a strong feeling of being Martinican is associated with a whole set of common references to France. Over the past 60 years, when colonization ended and the assimilation process became more effective, the feeling of being somewhat dispossessed of one's past grew stronger, and claims for memory emerged on the public and political scene. This explains why any cultural policy has to deal with balancing the momentum of Frenchness and the strong claim for a cultural autonomy from France. These trends have taken shape in the négritude concept by our great poet and writer Aimé Césaire, and also the créolité concept promoted by writers such as Raphaël Confiant, Patrick Chamoiseau, and Edouard Glissant, who is well-known in the United States. So this leads to my second point about the how history, well, the historical consciousness in Martinique. So let's have a quick overview about searching and teaching history from 19th century to present. Then, whoop. What are the new practices, and of course amateur practices such as family research? So my question is, history as a leisure or as a need? One, you know, motto we always hear is, we were never taught our history, what I call our ancestors, the Gauls syndrome. In many, many public debates, that's what you always hear. Although when you make a research about that issue of the teaching of history, you know that since the beginning of the 20th century, there have been many attempts of integrating inside the history teaching local points of view. But the influence of Césaire on one hand, and the rather chaotic political situation in the decolonization period of the French Empire, led to a more activist movement in the French West Indies, directly influenced by the Cuban Revolution on one hand and the independence of most Caribbean British colonies. And most of the reference books that are still in use were produced in the 1960s, 1980s by people, historians, who were deeply committed in the progress of their country. But by shyness or conformity, the teaching of local history remained scattered in schools, even when there did exist official textbooks that were devoted to local history since the 1960s and 1970s. In spite of the undeniable contribution of the post-colonial historians to Caribbean history, the lack of visibility of their production in the medias and in education led to the feeling of non-history as what Edouard Glissant called the erasure of collective memory. The slavery issue that exploded in 1998 for the 150th anniversary of the abolition, and the official obligation made in 2000 by the French government to adapt the curriculum to the local context have urged the teachers for a change. So a number of actions were undertaken to reinvest the past and recreate memory where it was thought it was lacking. And, well, the main achievement at the, well, French level was the act that was passed in 2001 that recognized the African slave trade as a crime against humanity. So this historical theme of slavery has become central to historical studies and to also the cultural identity. And this was called back during the 2009 general strikes that occurred in Guadeloupe and Martinique. And afterwards, there were meetings called the Etats Généraux that gathered the population, and many expressed on these meetings and on the website that was created that they had to know about their history and that documents had to be accessible. So from the above explained, it appears that what might be considered as a hobby, such as family research or amateur history, takes a deeper meaning in that context. So I won't maybe be long on that the creation of genealogical societies, but I must mention that the first ones was a kind of béquet club in the late 1970s, and there have been several associations that were created, and the first Martinican. Created locally, was created in only in 2002. While this demand grew stronger, where were the archives and what were they doing? And how could an archival institution be in the midst of a societal debate and also remain as a permanent and unbiased reference? Well, flashback on the history of archives in Martinique. So it's not until 1949 that a regular Department of Archives was established. A public service closely dependent from the government. It has become with what we call the decentralization, devolution, that's the kind of transition I found, became a local public service, accounted for its outreach policy before the local authority of the General Council of Martinique. Actually, archives have never been considered as a critical asset by politicians as well as by the government commissioners. So in their struggle to exist, archivists in Martinique have addressed the issue of public demand in different manners. From their very start on, they had a very strong sense of their mission as educators. And when Martinique became a département, the new appointed archivist was committed to organize exhibits and radio programs to bring this kind of civilization that was still lacking and that colonization had failed to bring. But later on, when the debate on public history had become more political, archivists tended to adopt a more cautious attitude. Although the education department was created in 1973, people still had a sense of archives as a remote place where hardly a document was accessible. And when I was appointed in 2000, I was really puzzled to hear people telling me that the archives was a kind of Fort Knox, a fortress, And it was only accredited a few people who could access the documents. And this was somewhat surprising to me because at the same time, the staff and our own records showed me that exhibition had been set up, contributions of the chief archivist. There were many contributions of the chief archivist in many milieus, such as, the ACH, Association of Caribbean Historians, or Carbica, of course, because she was in the first... the creation of Carbica in 1975, and other Martinican heritage association. So I lately understood that according to the dominant social codes in Martinique, the chief archivist was quite well known and recognized as a distinguished specialist of local history, but archives as themselves and as an institution devoted to the public weren't considered as such. So this was a kind of, the conception of archives as a place of erudition had prevailed again upon the notion of a place for the people. So we had to, reflect about that, think about that, and try to analyze our practices to, build new programs. So this is the archives, the old building that was built in 1971, and the new building, which is the same building but refurbished and with an extension. This is what you can see if you come to Martinique now. So our audience, I'll go quick because I only have. Time is running out. We have readers, reading room readers, normal users, I think more or less the same kind that Avril talked about, so nothing particular to say about that. But we also had visitors to the exhibitions. And, our statistics showed that there was an increase of that number of visitors from 2000 to 2005, we passed from, about 500 to 1,800 visitors. And the years after, an average between 1,000 and 1,400. And we also have pupils coming to us, about 400 to 5,000 as an average for the past 5 years. As a matter of fact, as I said before, we like a true survey on the social cultural profile of our visitors. But it's obvious that our audience was still a middle-class elite, except for part of the people who came for an administrative purpose. So we had to make a new action plan, and we considered different issues. So we had to see how to reach new audience and reflect the social diversity in the use of archives. We had also to address the urgent claims for memory in, specific subjects as slavery, but not only slavery. And we also thought of how to develop trust and, make the archives of the people. That's what also Avril mentioned as... I don't remember how she told that, but it was very well said. So the idea is not only, offering cultural services, but also see how people could respond, and the way they respond is also what they can put in the archives. And that's one point Avril talked about also. And this is very important to us, and, I'll tell you a little about some of the things we made. So first is the programs in education. So we have each year a meeting with the teachers at the beginning of the term, and we also organized an international conference in 2007. The proceedings are about to be published at last about teaching history in the Caribbean, and that was very well attended by people, mostly teachers. And we also have visits, workshops with school children, and we publish several educational books, such as on Indian immigration and women, World War II. So I have leaflets describing everything. So if you're interested, it's in French, of course. And you can see that on our website also. What has only to be mentioned about these books is that it's not only teachers and school children who read them. Actually, they have some of them have a good public success in bookshops, especially the one on women, because we have to reissue it once. So that means that it's in some way fills a gap of kind of middle level information, historical information. We have exhibitions also. We have every year one exhibition with original documents, but also on banners, and some are traveling. So some had really a good public success, such as this one on the free-colored people, or on the Catholic Church. So we see how some themes are really appealing to the people. And same for conferences, such as the one we organized last year. It was the 50th anniversary of the 1959 riots in Martinique, and we had over 160 people attending. That was quite So the assessment of this first step we took in having a kind of diverse activity in our outreach program is that we had a true success in the education program, and the public image of the archives has very much improved. But we still have to do about, you know, attracting a more popular audience and also developing our traveling exhibitions. So we thought we had a new step to take, and using the IT technologies, and this is my last point. So that was supposed to be the main subject of my presentation, but by the way...
Sorry?
Yeah. Because it was supposed to be launched in May, but, well, for different reasons it wasn't, so it's still to come. This is, well, the kind of achievement of a program, a digitization program we launched in 2004 with the help of European funds. And since then, so we had been urged by the people who knew that there were some... material that was already digitized to have it online, and it took us 5 to 6 years to have it, and I hope in September so this you can access. So it's the Martinican Cultural Heritage Program portal. So the objectives we had towards the public is to reach our distant public, because 28% of the population born in Martinique is abroad, well, and particularly in France. So this was a public we had also to reach. There was a kind of a demand of a direct access to document, kind of thing, you know, you just have to press the button and you get the answer. So of course, I called it a kind of ATM to history and culture. So this is something that has, of course, to see with our consumers, society we're in. We also wanted to reach a younger audience, and of course, internet is something that is very identified with the younger people. And the idea also is kind of tuning the old world notion of cultural heritage with a new world approach, because the categories that are used in Europe for defining cultural heritage have to be revised, of course, in our so-called new countries. But also for the staff themselves, I thought it was an opportunity to revise our notion of what archives were for, not only a resource center, but also had to develop new services. And on this occasion, this is a way of refining the skills in how to interact with the public, and also how to work with other people, because that project is a project that is built on partnership with different cultural other institutions. So what will be in that will be not only access to documents, but also to information on historical landmarks, buildings, artworks, and also on, what is called intangible heritage. And that will all be accessible through one search engine. So I show you a few slides of what is there. So we have there something presenting the different partners. So, of course, the archives, but also the museum, archaeology museum, the Schulcher library, and so on. We have tried to think in that portal as something really user-friendly and user-friendly approach, so as to find how to do it more simple for people who have no familiarity with the vocabulary semantics of cultural things, and to offer different levels of information, because there will be, of course, the database with, for people who are really searching things, in particular, and for researchers, specialists, and so on, but also educational resources or general public resources, such as virtual exhibitions and so on. And the other point is the collaborative indexation, which will be built in the portal, so that people, for instance, for the civil birth records and so on, they can read them and index them with the names, so that it builds something that will be useful for other users that can help them. And for instance, already we have indexed all the names that were given to the slaves after the abolition. So most of the population can find the first ancestor that could be found already in the database. So this is what it looks like on the homepage. This is the GIS system, because it is searchable through the a cartographic interface. And this is a view of the virtual exhibitions there will be. So the first one is about Gauguin, the visit Gauguin made to Martinique, which is something not very well known, but which links, Martinique in the world history of art. And this is, the space, my space that people can create and have access to different, functionalities. Okay, so as a conclusion, this leads us, that project leads us to a renewed reflection of our 2002 outreach objectives, which is to reinforce network and partnerships. So we have to better investigate on social networks and how we can include virtual social networks in our way to reach out to the people. We also have, through the project, the opportunity of having a deeper impact assessment of our actual audience, because with the statistics that can be made through that project, we can better identify who is using the services. What we have to do, above all, is keeping from routine. Okay, that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, so bear with us for a second. We have a slight technical problem. In the meantime, we do have some handouts up here that Avril and Dominique brought, if you want to grab one as you wait for a minute.
Yes.
Yeah, questions. If there are any questions at this moment, too.
May I begin?
Yeah. Okay. The question was, what type of collaboration is there between the islands, especially considering the different languages, language barriers?
There is collaboration between some of the islands and among the islands. First of all, we have an organization called CARBICA, which more or less brings the islands together, since the archivists of all the Caribbean islands belong to CARBICA. So you find in the Caribbean, we are like an archival family. We all know each other, and we know what is happening in our various archives. Where there are specific needs, we look to each other. For example, Dominique has been to my archives, and she carried out an assessment of our registry records so that we could see exactly what was needed for the conservation of these records. And I have been to St. Vincent to help them with records management. So you find that we work collaboratively.
There have been several attempts of, you know, making a kind of a common display of the resources that were in the different Caribbean archives. And of course, the internet has completely changed, you know, the first attempts that were made in the 1980s. And we are carrying out a project of setting up a portal. That was what Burgess mentioned in his introduction. So the Megan project. So we're just at the first step of that. So we established the website, and we set up with the software that the International Council of Archives provides for free. So there should be soon. Yes, that, already we have descriptions of several archival institutions. So what we first want to have is a kind of directory describing more or less what's inside each of them. And then we have identified, we had the first meeting in December in Martinique to identify what could be the highlights we would put, because we can't put everything on that, and how to link the internet, you know, outreach programs of the different countries with that portal, so as to make it more visible. So I hope, we have a meeting in November, and we'll go what's going on after. Mm-hmm.
Other questions?
And there is also, yes, there is also, we have forums on, Google Groups and so on. So there's a website for Karbika, and exactly. You can get the links to the different forums. So if, people are members, they can participate. And some, there's the Cartas, the Cartas also blog, which is open to everybody, even non-member.
Mm-hmm. I have a quick question. I wonder if you can talk about the type of audience that comes to the archives after you go out and do your outreach. Are they mostly academics? Are they students sort of in high school? Or are they the public, mostly people looking to do genealogical research and whatnot?
Well, what we found after we've gone out is we got the ordinary citizen coming in. This week we just finished our emancipation outreach. Where are we now? The beginning of August, right? So at the end of that time, within this week, right after the exhibitions that we have or the fairs, then we would get like an influx of people coming in who said, okay, yes, I'm coming this week or I'm coming next week for a specific something which they raised at the event that we had. In terms of the increase in researchers, as I mentioned, the specific events where somebody may have been working on a paper or a book or something, and we identify resources that we may have that would support what they're doing, then definitely they're coming after. Based on the statistics that we have collected after the various events we initiated, there has certainly been an increase in the influx, both of the ordinary person who would not normally come, as well as, I don't want to call them amateur historians, but other historians who we have not seen usually have also come in. With respect to the schools, as I said, it's ongoing with them. We always reach out to them, so that audience is kind of always there.
Well, for Martinique, if I can add something to what I said before, it's about 55% reading room users who come for family. Their own family research. So these people are mostly retired people who have time to spend, as the opening hours are that of office hours. So, And well, during August, we have the Martinicans from the, well, what we call the Hexagon, so the European part of France, who come to Martinique to make also their research. But one public we mustn't neglect is a very diverse socially public, is the people coming for their, you know, land deeds and coming because they have problems with their, well, inheritance title, yes. And that makes about 15% of the people we that come to us.
Okay, I guess I could begin now. I'd like to say good morning to everybody. Margot Thomas from the National Archives Authority of St. Lucia, and it is a pleasure to be with you. We're looking at moving forward through innovative and educational outreach services in our small island. St. Lucia is a very small island in the Caribbean. It is only 238 square miles. We have a population of approximately 160,000 people, a life expectancy of 69 years for men and 76 years for women, because we know the men are the ones who normally are involved in a kind of life of debauchery. So, and we depend on tourism and agriculture. And St. Lucia is the land of our two Nobel laureates, Derek Walcott and Sir William Arthur Lewis. Here, I thought I should let you see the Berlin map of St. Lucia, 1764. And that's what they thought we looked like. And this is a modern map of St. Lucia. And I would like you to Google St. Lucia. It's a lovely place, number one for weddings in the Caribbean. So get married and come to St. Lucia, or come to St. Lucia to get married. Like most of the colonized countries of the Caribbean, interest in archives and protection of records is a relatively new phenomenon. It was in 1954 that the Archaeological and Historical Society began the process of rescuing and preserving records. And I would like to tell you that we have been very unfortunate to have very devastating fires in St. Lucia. And maybe it stemmed from the fact that we were being fought over by the French and the English, you know, and we are called the Helen of the West Indies, because like Helen of Troy, these two colonizing powers would fight over our country, and then they would destroy and burn everything in the process. So you find that we lost many records. Government eventually recognized the efforts of the Archaeological and Historical Society, and in 1975 bestowed the title on the Society of Preserver of Records, and provided the Society with a subvention and two military barracks for the storage of records. 1993 was a watershed year, as the role of the ANAID Society was repealed by our act. We had an act put into place called the National Archives of St. Lucia Authority Act, number 16 of 1993. And I was appointed the first national archivist, and the National Archives was established, excuse me, as an authority under the office of the Prime Minister. And here you can see the record, because we always need the record as evidence. So here we have the act. And here you can see our archives, two military buildings. And you can see above the road, but we have basements going down. So this is our that I'm telling you, the good thing about working at the archives, we have a lovely view of the sea. Okay, new and fledgling, but armed with a mandate, because we had a mandate then. Because when I started to work in 92, I told them I cannot work unless we have an act, unless I have a mandate to do the work. And we got an act. You have an act in Trinidad?
No.
Up to now, Trinidad has no act, but that's something else. So the National Archives had to conceptualize innovative and educational approaches to help the people understand and appreciate the work of the National Archives. So the National Archives embarked on a series of national exhibitions, and we started with one that we called Tribute, an exhibition dedicated to highlighting the achievements of individuals who contributed to the growth and development of the country, and we would mount it in November because that is the same time that we celebrate our veterans who fought in the Second World War, and it became our flagship exhibition. We also have many themed exhibitions, and something we do, like we collaborate with different institutions like the hotels, Sandals and the other hotels, and we go and we might set up an exhibition for them or go and give talks, but I'll come to that later. And we have done things like Castries Through the Years, Politics in St. Lucia, St. Lucian First Ladies. Now, when we say First Ladies, that is our version, not of the Michelle Obamas and so on, but of women who were first in the fields of endeavor. Lucian Carnival, Nobel Laureates in Focus, the banana industry, and so on. Independence Exhibition 2009, We got our independence in 1979, so it was 30 years. What we do, we take the exhibitions to the people, you know, so they could see. So here we have part of our exhibition, and here you could see part of the gifts. These are some of the gifts we got at independence. You see a marlin, a big fish there that was from Bahamas. We have a footstool from Ghana and so on. So we take the exhibits to the people so they could see what we have. And you can see them. When we have exhibitions, we have so many people coming. You can see, you know, the evidence of that. You can see they come, and everybody's always so excited to know what the archives has to offer. So what I have found is that there is a thirst for knowledge and for the history. So people really come out to take part in our exhibitions. The other thing we put in place was a history quiz. In an effort to enable the students of the secondary schools become more knowledgeable about and to appreciate our history, so we have a history quiz. And what we do, we put together what we call archives information packs, comprising 5 booklets covering different topics, and we send them to the schools, we go to the schools, and we give them for study as the basis for the quiz. And here you can see, now I got an archival photo for you to see our first quiz when we had it, you know. And these are some of the booklets, notable St. Lucians, hurricanes and storms, historical events, estates in St. Lucia, constitutional change in St. Lucia, the pre-independence era. You know, so we get people involved in what we're doing. And I am so excited to be an archivist. I find it is so wonderful. It's one of the best jobs we could have. As the archivist, I go around and I do a lot of talks. Now, here you see I have the National Archivist at the Boys Industrial School, Massad. Now, these are bad boys. Bad boys who, through the court system, are put into a school. Now, what better way to go and take the history and the archives to them? And I just giving them a talk, and you can see me sitting there with the director of the institution. And here I am at the Canon Laurie Anglican School, the students, because I think we have to go into the schools, go to the institutions, let them know about the archives. They don't have to come to us. And I think this has been our problem as archivists. We sit down in the archives, and we expect people to know about the archives. We expect to go forward. No, we have to go talk. Let them know. Go on the radio. Go on the television. Let people know what we're doing. That is what I do, and I think it works. And this is at the District 2 Schools Rally, February 2009. You can see all the children sitting there, eager to hear what I have to tell them. And there I am at the podium talking to them. You know, so... And here we have the students of the Sir Ira Simmons Secondary School coming to the archives. I'm giving a talk to them. So we have the archives. We're open to the public. If they want to come and visit, come to have a talk, we are there, and they know that. So what has happened is that we find people coming into the archives. That was one of our open days because we have our National Archives Month that we have in October. And why do we have it in October? Because in St. Lucia, October is National Creole Month because we are a Creole country. Creole is our mother tongue. So if you have somebody say, moi c'est je set lici, c'est là moi sorti, I am a native of St. Lucia, it is there I am from. So the children come in, we give talks to them, that is my assistant giving a talk, and you can see they're very eager to learn all about microfilm and everything else. And here we have workshops. Last year we had a workshop on the management of AV materials, because we try to work with any and everybody, and it was hosted, we were given the finances for it from the French embassy, you know, so, and we had visit, and here we are, we visited the HTS television station, so, yeah, we have talks and the certificate being presented, and I'm sure Dominic can recognize the person giving the certificate.
Yes. Costa.
Fred Costa, yes, he's the ambassador. He's not the ambassador, he's an attaché. And here we have, this is another workshop, records management, and that's at the Ministry of External Affairs, because we cannot do archives without records management. So I go and do the records management because I'm in both archives and records management. And there I had the staff of the registry of the Ministry of External Affairs. I've just finished a little workshop with them. So here you can see the evidence of that. Now we are involved in lots of organizations. Like I sit on the board of the National Stamp Committee. So we meet first to see what stamps we're doing. Nobel Laureate Week, which is a big thing in St. Lucia, I sit on that. So the National Archives is a member of the Nobel Laureate Week Committee. And we seek to promote the dissemination of information about the islands to Nobel laureates. So Arthur Lewis for Economics, 1979, and Honorable Derek Walcott for Literature, 1992. And things we have done exhibitions, we have done a memory book of autographs where we ask people to say why they think it is such a wonderful thing having two Nobel laureates and signing with their names and so on. We published Twin Peaks of Excellence, which is a book about our Nobel laureates. We got the inscription of the papers of Sir Arthur Lewis to the International Memory of the World and so on. I'll have to be very fast. This is our Nobel laureate memory book that people sign. We have internships and training. From 2004, we started a summer program where young people come and they get trained in archival work. And through the years, they have been taught accessioning, indexing, digitizing, and preparation of databases. And here we have one of the summer students involved in digitizing. We have a lot of visitors. We have visitors from the Francophonie to our genealogical center. We have a genealogical center, and this is a very big hit with the public. They always come in for land records, birth certificates, and so on. And I have to go very quickly. We collaborate with institutions, as I said, and we collaborated with the National Printing Corporation. And here we have our archives on the cover, and we gave information in something called the Weekly Focus inside the cover. And here we have Sir Arthur Lewis. We collaborate with institutions and individuals. We give information to journalists, teachers, students, writers. And we have an arrangement with Radio 100 and Helen TV to produce a program entitled Historical Footnote. And that's what I wanted to show you at the beginning. We don't have any audio, but they pay us every month. We give them information, and it is aired Historical Footnote every day. And that is a very interesting program. And the one I wanted to show you had to do with World War II when the submarines bombed ships in our harbor and so on. Well, in less than 20 years, the National Archives has become a well-recognized institution which contributes very meaningfully to the development of the country. And I must tell you that now the archives, its outreach and educational services have been instrumental in giving the National Archives a public face. And honestly, to be truthful, all of you were archivists. I don't know how you can do it. We were a small country, so everybody seemed to know everybody else. But I think using radio and television and the new technology, this is the way to go. So I go on the radio, I go on television, because I'm now in the process of developing a TV program on history with our local TV station, which will be aired every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, you know? And I must say that this has been a very good way of giving the archives a good public face, taking the archives to the people. For too long, archivists have been sitting down in the archives, and people believe that all they do is to be among dusty old papers, which is not true at all. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much to all three presenters. We'll take some more questions now. We have about 5 more minutes, I think. Yes.
Oh.
The question was, when you go into the schools for Margot Thomas, how do you keep students engaged and interested in explaining accessioning, processing, archival theory and stuff like that?
No, well, there are two parts to archives. There is the technical part, and there is the historical part. Now, it depends on the ages of the children that you are dealing with. And perhaps it's because I was a teacher for 20 years before I became an archivist. So I deal with educational matters from the point of view of a teacher and wanting children to learn. So I take it down to their level, you know? So we go with samples. I have prepared PowerPoint presentations, and we also take samples to them so they can see. And you explain to them about the need to preserve, why we should preserve, the importance of our history, give them historical tidbits, show them the microfilm, show them the microfiche, show them examples of our old postcards. You know, make it personal to them, where they live and what the area was like before and what it looks like now, you know. It is a matter of, as Avril had a very good caption for a presentation, up close and personal, personalizing it to the lives of the children, you know, and bringing it down to their level. And that's what we do. When we're working with the older ones, because the schools come to us, they do their SBAs, school-based assessment for social studies. So they come, and there are different topics that they have to deal with. So they have the old maps, they have the photographs, they have the text, you know, so that's what we do.
A follow-up to that question. You said you go into the schools and do some trainings, you teach students about archives and the archival profession. Is there an effort to try to send those students to schools, maybe overseas, or their grants and scholarships to help them actually try to become archivists?
Well, the thing is, we don't have any finances to do that, you know. But what we're doing, it is to make them aware, to see that there can be a career in archives and records management. That's the most we can do. But we do not have the finances to provide additional training, though.
I just want to add something. Just to add to what Margot said concerning the training, we're in a similar position. We try to mentor people when they come to us and encourage them into the profession, and we go to career fairs and so, and highlight what we do. But one thing we were able to get done is the government has what they call a priority list for training and scholarships that they offer. And we were finally able to get them to list archival management as one of the priority areas of training for the public sector, so that we have a student going up. She's leaving in September. She's going to start in September. She has gotten a full scholarship to attend UCL, University College London, to do archival management. So slowly but surely, there's encouragement in the profession in the younger folks.
Other questions? Can you talk about government support? I know you mentioned you touched on that a little bit, but just in general, the three of you, if you can talk about how supportive is the, you know, your government on some of the programs that you're putting on, financially, with technology, with anything like that?
Go ahead, you go first.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Financially, the government is not very supportive in terms of our programs because, again, as we said, the archives doesn't appear to them to have any political mileage. There's nothing to be gained in their minds out of it. So we spend a lot of time trying to advocate to get funding and get budgets increased for things like that. But certainly, I think I mentioned it in the presentation, once you're sure that there's something that they can gain out of it, as say the minister coming to an event, which is just, you know, just some PR for him, but then they think of it as something to do. And he would, well, he used to ask then, so when next are you having a program? And there's something for him to go to. And once they're aware that there's some mileage out of it, you can leverage that when you go to them for money. They go to them to budget. And then the public is very demanding. The public insists on having things online. They insist on having things readily available to them. So in order for us to finance programs, they always know when they get asked, okay, so why isn't this online? Why isn't this digitized? They come to us and say, so what are you doing? And then, of course, we can leverage that. But in terms of just saying they know and they will support us, it's not that easy to get them to give us funding.
Well, our archives is set up a little differently to most archives because most archives fall within government. They're part of the whole government setup. But our archives is an authority, like a statutory authority, and we are supported by a full government subvention. They give us a subvention every year broken down into quarterly subventions, and that is how we run the archives. And I must say that the Caribbean governments have been under a lot of pressure, especially, I don't know for the other islands, but St. Lucia, we were a banana country now. We are depending on tourism, and after 9/11, there was really a slide in visitors and so on. But at least we are being supported by the government, and now the public, they are now so aware of the archives and what we're doing that I think the pressure will be on government to give us more support, because anytime I go on the radio or TV, I say, well, we don't get, you know, enough finances for our quarterly subvention and so on. But at least they have never cut us, which is good, because, you know, they tend to cut programs and so on. So at least we are there and we are getting more exposure, more, because if you're there working very hard and nobody knows what you're doing, to me it's a lost cause. Let people know what you're doing, and when you let them know, you're always in their face, and you know they'll always know you're there and they'll have to help you out, you know. And I think that is our approach in St. Lucia to it.
Okay. And well, for Martinique, we have an annual budget. We can, you know, decide what we want to do with that budget. Well, with the crisis in 2008, that budget was cut. But hopefully we had the opportunity of making fundraising projects. And we seized the opportunity of the European funds we can access as we are part of Europe. So that's why we weren't so much impacted by the crisis, because we had that program on digitization, and now that on the web portal, so that makes us gives us the possibility of having funds to pursue the project.
All right, well, I think that's all the time we have for questions. Thank you very much to the presenters.